Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Alex Avila, and we're back with Love University. I'm a clinical psychologist, author, and speaker. And as you know, our purpose here is to teach you how to live a higher level life, to love yourself, others, and higher nature. And each week, we're bringing you something very interesting that you can apply to your life in love, relationships, and self-esteem, and basically achieving your full potential. Now, today, I'm very happy to have a very, very distinguished guest here, who is a media-celebrated author, dating, sex, and relationship expert. Wendy Newman is an author. She writes articles, gives advice, does a lot of different videos and many different things to help, but I think primarily women, find love and stay in love. Wendy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Avila.
Yes, we're very excited because looking through your materials, you have an amazing amount of very interesting materials here. And I just want to jump right into this because I know a lot of our listeners are very, really interested in, you know, learning how to find that love and keep it and, you know, have a great relationship. And I think one of the things you talk about that resonates is what we call the dating myths. Now, this is something you say, and correct me if I'm correct or not correct. relationships don't take hard work. They take, I think you said, a remarkable attitude and communication. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the thing about our culture is we're told that we should fall in love. It should be easy. And then, but you hear all the time, relationships are hard work. But yes, if it's love at first sight and it's easy and there's chemistry and it's amazing, how could it be hard work? Did you pick wrong? Ah. Right. So there's all these little fairy tales that make us think that it's our fault or that if we have to work hard on the other end, we don't have it right. And part of the conundrum is we don't focus on the right things. We don't focus on paying attention to, sure, chemistry should be there, but also commonality and compatibility, which we hear a lot, but we don't put it into practice when we're actually going out dating.
Definitely. And you know, I've written some books, Love Types and Guy Types, and basically talking about personality compatibility in the different personality types. But I still didn't quite hear the answer. Are relationships hard work or easy work or something else?
They can be very easy if you pick well. So if you pick the person that you actually resonate with, that can see you, that can see your point of view, that can easily communicate with you. You know, I almost hate the word communicate because when we say communicate, it doesn't communicate anything, right? It doesn't give anywhere to go with that with people.
Yeah, it's a common word.
Right. But be able to share what's really important to you and what you need and what would make you happy. Those are the types of things that we need to be able to share to have an easy time, to have an easy relationship, to not have it be hard, to not have it be work, and have it received well.
I like that a lot because, you know, in the work I've done with research and psychological types, you know, the thinker, the feeler, introvert, extrovert, and different personality combinations. It is true that it's a lot more harmonious. I think the word you said was harmonious or easy to get along with when you do have that person at the beginning, right? When you choose the compatible type. And then, of course, I mean, there is some effort, you know, there is work in a certain sense, but it's, you could say happy work, right? Or work that, you know, really is comfortable for you because you're improving something that's already good, as opposed to trying to fix something that's not.
Yeah, and it can be exciting, and you can stay curious, and it can be an adventure instead of drudgery.
Okay. All right, another dating myth. And I like the fact that you bring out these myths, and then you kind of offer solutions. Now, you say that newly divorced guys are not emotionally unavailable, which most people think they are. Tell us about that.
Well, there are two kinds, and one kind is absolutely emotionally unavailable.
Oh, okay. There was one kind. Okay.
And it's usually the kind we hear about, whether we have that experience ourselves or our girlfriend is crying into her wine glass at the unavailability because they bounced, they rebounded, right?
Okay, that's right.
They rebound and then they bounce on out. So that is a thing. But there really are two kinds of newly divorced guys, and the other kind don't. They actually have the ability to commit. They processed their divorce possibly while they were in their marriage and have done some pretty great work on it since then. And even though it's new, that they're in good enough shape to be ready to commit or to at least start exploring committing with someone else. And you have to be able to distinguish the difference between the two.
That's an interesting point. Now, Dan, a producer, I think you were a divorced guy at one point. Which one were you? Were you the emotionally committed or uncommitted?
I'm divorced in my mind.
Oh, wait a minute. Dad. Okay.
But not actually divorced. No, no, no.
Not actually. Oh, okay. All right.
So, he's processing now.
I like to get a jump start on things.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, hopefully that's not the case, Don, but we'll have to work on that. But I like the idea that, you know, someone has to be emotionally healed or in that, you know, have gone through the process to get back, you know, into the whole commitment idea in marriage. Now, another thing, you also talk about certain truths or certain, you know, realities of love and relationships and dating. You said something like there's the big four troublemakers in nearly every relationship. What are those four troublemakers?
Oh, the first one is our expectations, that we expect things from people just because we like them or we love them, that they must meet our expectations, right? So there's automatic expectations, which we're setting ourselves up for big failures there. There is this myth that we can trust people. If I love you, I should be able to trust you implicitly, right? No. No, if my partner trusted me to be on time just because I loved him, he'd be disappointed with me half of the time because I'm usually somewhere between 5 minutes late to on time.
Okay.
So just because you love someone doesn't mean that you should be able to give them the trust card for everything. They need to show you what is it that they can be trusted for, including being trusted for negative things.
I see. So expectations, so trying to be more realistic about what you expect or understanding the combinations. What is it that you mean by that?
Well, how about just not expecting anything? How about instead looking at what are you signing up for with me? What are you signing up for with our life? What are you willing to be accountable for?
Very good
because
point.
I can count on you for what you're willing to be accountable for, but I can't count on you for expectations, especially if they've gone unsaid.
Interesting. You know, there's an old Asian proverb that says, he or she who expects everything has nothing, but he who expects nothing has everything. Because again, you know, the reality is what will dictate what happens. And
right.
So you're coming with a blank slate and kind of determining that, it sounds like. What are the other three so-called troublemakers?
So the first one is expectation. The second one is trust.
Oh, the second one is trust. Okay.
Yeah. The third one is owning people.
Mm-hmm.
We think we own them. Ah. We own their time.
Yes.
Some women think they can own what their partner wears.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, owning people.
Well, Dan's nicely dressed today with jeans and t-shirts, Dan. So I don't think you're owned, are you?
Why, thank you, doctor.
Oh. wouldn't
these
say
are granimals. I just match the tags and they go together.
Okay. No problem. Okay.
I think that I have a soul friend out there because love granimals.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
I want them to bring them back for adults because that's what I would be wearing.
Okay. So owning people, obviously, you know, people think when you get married, you know, you can change the person, right? You know, it's like you have a license to sculpt and make them into the image. But you're saying that shouldn't be the case. We should accept them as they are, you know, as you found them.
Yes. And then changing people is the fourth one. Exactly.
Oh, okay. I looped ahead of you. Okay.
You did. So the ownership comes in. And you know, I think that one of the things that women don't realize why it takes men longer to commit than women on an average, right? Is because you understand with every level of commitment comes more accountability and potentially more ownership. She's going to own your weekends. She's going to own your holidays. So are you willing to be owned in all of
your
the ways?
Your football games, your basketball games.
Right.
Wendy, it sounds like you have some brothers or something. You really understand the male mind in some ways.
I do. I do have brothers.
Okay. Maybe you learned it from them or something, right? Something about the male mind.
No, I actually spent the last 16 years of my life taking on understanding men because I didn't get them at all. So this is one of the things I really wanted to change about my life is being able to understand partnership and understand men. So it's been my full-time job for the last 16 years.
Well, that's great. Let's backtrack a little bit. Now, you know, I'm sure you come from a story or a history, and we often talk about transforming pain into power here at Love University. And basically, you know, taking our past and finding the things that can make us stronger. Now, what's been your story? How did you get involved in this whole relationship coaching? And I mean, did you have a difficult relationship or something in the past?
Yeah, it started when I was three.
Great. Oh, wow. Okay.
But I won't tell you the 50-year history of my life.
You're more crazy.
That from a very, very young age, I learned one very important lesson, which is men break your heart. You can't count on them for anything. Mm-mm. And it was sad. And as I got older, I learned that men break my heart in all kinds of really unlovely ways, you know, childhood, teenage years, relationship years. And so I picked a really amazing, sweet man to marry when I was 22.
Yes.
And I loved him so much. And I picked him. He was safe. I could boss him around. It was perfect. Perfect.
Perfect.
I moved to San Francisco where all the men were gay. I met my amazing husband who I could boss around. I worked for women's organizations where I ran the show, and I've systematically got rid of all masculinity out of my life. Oh. And it was awesome.
I see. But then you said you were afraid of masculinity or something about that.
I was. I didn't know what to do with men. I knew they disappointed me. I didn't know what y'all wanted from me. It was just easier not to deal with it.
Okay.
And it was great at 22. I had won the game, but by systematically just abolishing all masculinity, no one was going to dominate me. And by the time I was 35, I was exhausted because I was doing everything.
Right. You're in the dominant role, and that was overwhelming for you in some way, or tiring.
Yeah. Great at 22. Exhausting at 35, having weight of the world and all responsibilities fully on my shoulders in my marriage.
So did you meet a man that was both masculine and sensitive or something like that at some point?
After the divorce, it took 10 years.
It took some time.
but I did meet him and he's pretty great. But after that, at 35, I decided I needed to heal that. And that's when I started my career looking. I just started as a student and then ended up shifting into teacher and studying men and interviewing men.
That's really interesting because, you know, from pain often comes solutions. You know, I was in an incompatible relationship and I started working with love types, personality types, and compatibility. And that kind of was my drive. And also with shy people and introverts who have a different energy. Now, in terms of your advice here, now you come up with some interesting terminology. You say men are natural concealers. Is maddening. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what does that mean that men are natural concealers?
Well, you're going to naturally conceal what's important to you to protect you and those around you. Right. So you might protect your attachments and conceal what they are so they can't be used against you. You might conceal your strength so they won't be used against you. You can surprise someone with them. Right. So it's all in a survival mentality, where for women, one of the things that I've learned over the 16 years is we don't try and survive by concealing. We try and survive by instinct, by revealing. Because with the revealing, it causes connection and it causes the ability to have that information spread so we're all safe. We're all on the same page.
That's very interesting because the idea of a man being emotionally more vulnerable than women in some ways is something that, you know, some research shows that. You know, females often go to therapists and they show a higher rate of depression. But in reality, men may have as much depression, but they don't express it. You know, they might maybe drink or fight or do something different. But to actually admit that they're vulnerable, that's something more difficult for them.
Yeah.
So you're trying to help women understand that. Now, you know, in personality types, you talk about the thinker versus the feeler. You may have heard about Jungian typology, Myers-Briggs, and those kind of things, where there are certain males that are more feeling, more sensitive, and so forth. They may express their feelings more. And some women are more maybe logical, and they may not express it as much. So how do you deal with that kind of combination? Let's say you have a woman who is maybe more of a logical person with a male who's more feeling. What's your best advice for that couple?
I think that they just need to understand that this is the package that each other is and to learn kind of like the love languages, right? To learn to speak to that person in a way that works for them. So I'm very logical. I'm less of the feelings-based woman. I'm way more logical and
is your
not
man more
really
emotional? Is your guy more emotional than when you were with
him? No, he's both. He's amazing. He's both. And I think for both of us, it's a learned experience to tap into the feelings. And so it's a willingness to be vulnerable and a willingness to go there. But we're both literally thinking this is what we're going to do now.
I see.
Think our way to feeling, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the thinkers can actually be pretty good at thinking their way, you know, understanding the feeling point of view. Now, he looks like a big teddy bear in that picture. Is he kind of a teddy bear kind of guy, or is he a little tough?
No, he's very sweet.
He's sweet too.
He's a leader, though. He's very massive. Okay. He's a very bigger, stronger version of me, basically.
Oh, okay. That's just interesting. So if you get into a wrestling match, it'll be a lot of fun, right?
He wins.
Okay. Now, I guess being so knowledgeable about this, is that something he says, oh, don't use it against me? Or does he ever kid you about that you have so much knowledge about this stuff?
No, it was one of the very first things that he noticed about me. He actually was one of the newly divorced guys, to which on our second or third date, I said, wow, too bad that you're so newly divorced, because you're pretty amazing, and too bad it's not going to work out for us.
Oh, so you went according to the myth. You thought he was unavailable emotionally.
Well, it was so soon that I thought it's impossible. Hmm. It's just impossible. And he said, oh, no, I get to worry about that. You don't get to worry about my bad timing. That's mine. And I thought, damn. Okay. But what he said is, look, I may not have a lot of experience. He had been in a 24-year marriage. So he said, I may not have a lot of experience in relationships with women, but I'm a 48-year-old man. I know women, and you have something that I don't see, which is a real lean to understanding me and to partnership. So he leaned in. He didn't worry I was going to use it against him.
Yeah, like they always say, if you're a psychologist, oh, you're going to analyze me. Everyone you meet always says that.
Yeah.
So I'm sure relationships, it's okay. So you basically have a lot of this knowledge, and, you know, you gain through the years of studying, you know, assume relationships and people and women. And you also talk about, this is very interesting, the six modes of power of a woman. Now, I don't know, you're revealing some really good secrets here. So can you tell us a little bit of that? What are those modes of power for a woman?
Well, there are various traits that we have. When we access them and we use them on purpose, we can get different things than when we try and power through. Like, for example, I'll give you one of them just to show you what I mean. So the siren, right? You'd think that the sexy siren would only have one place, right? Mm-hmm. Which would be in courting and in wooing and in attracting. But if you pull the sexuality out of that sexy siren and you just use that, the playful side without the sexuality in it, it's how you actually can get men on your team to do really great work with you.
Oh, okay. Are you talking in a business point of view, or are you saying?
Yes.
Oh, in the business. Okay.
Yes. So you would think you would never want that engaging energy in business. No. You got to be like a man and, you know, be the biggest man in the room. Being the biggest man in the room as a woman is the farthest thing to get cooperation from a team of men you could ever do.
Very interesting. So basically the playfulness, the feminine energy in a positive way, you think can be very advantageous in business.
Yes.
If you separate the, you know, the, say the so-called sexual tension and all the other things.
Yes.
And, okay. Now in your modes of power, let me just read this quickly. You say one gets the guy, one makes men motivated. Another one, a man looks for a wife. One makes you a ride or die partner.
Yes.
One makes you a leader and inspiration, and one is your inner badass. Okay.
Yes.
So briefly go down those. So what does that mean?
There are ways to access, let's just say the last one, the inner badass, that is solely a woman, a core power that a woman has to say, this shall not be, and have it not show up as angry or masculine or aggressive, but fire, but sheer core fire. And having a woman being able to access that peace for herself, to stand in her truth, to be that inner badass, to be that fierce protector, or that of whatever that is she's standing for, whether it be herself, her family, her community, something she cares about.
So these powers are not just in a relationship with the man. You're saying these are general powers that she can apply to her many areas, like work and community?
Yeah, and the six feminine forms pieces comes out of my Happy in Love 8-week relationship course, and that's designed for relationship. But it absolutely speaks to where we can draw our power from. And normally where we draw our power from is in the CEO mode, drive it home, get it done, have some coffee, maybe a bite of sugar, keep it going. And there are six other places where we can be drawing energy from to just be so much more effective. And that's what the six modes are.
Yeah, I like that. That's almost like almost an Eastern take on things that, you know, there's power in the yin and the yang, you know, the feminine energy, the masculine energy. And, you know, there are different elements of a personality that can be very strong. So the siren is one, you know, the badass, you call it, the strong personality. And also you say something here about what every man looks for in a wife. Now, what do you think that is today? Because, you know, society is changing. Women are more independent, they're working more. What does a man really want in a wife today?
Well, that could be like a 2-hour conversation.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I can come up with 12 different things.
I think we can talk a lot. This is great stuff. This is amazing.
Yeah. Let me just give you a rattle off a couple of things that a man absolutely needs.
Okay.
One of the things he needs is he needs to be attracted.
Yes.
Right?
Sexual
chemistry has got to be there.
Yes.
And once that's handled, can he make her happy? Can she be happy? Is that something that is in her and that he can contribute to? Or is it just going to be an endless pit of not good enough? If he can't win with her, he's going to be out the door.
That's an extremely powerful point, to make her happy. So men really want that, right? They want their wife or their significant woman to be happy. And he may feel inadequate or he may feel he's not able to do it. Why do you think that is? Is it just a match that they have that it's not the right match?
It can be not the right match. Maybe he's trying to provide something that she's not interested in receiving. Or it may just be that she thinks that being that way is the right way to catch a man. Maybe he'll try harder. You know, a lot of women think, well, I'm not going to show I appreciate that because that, I mean, that's just a little thing. I can't surely little every little thing, or he's not going to try for big things.
Okay. Playing hard to get or reverse psychology kind of stuff. Okay. That's a little
not easily impressed.
Okay. That's tricky. But in a marriage, though, if he's not able to please her, is it she's not communicating to him or he doesn't understand her, the way she speaks? Or is it just they're not a good compatible match? What do you think is more common of those three?
I think we're all really terrible. We all, being men and women, we're all pretty terrible at receiving. So one of the things that women try and prove is that we can do it ourselves. But a man needs to contribute or he's not going to stick around. If there's nothing to give, he's going to be out.
Yes.
So if he can't make her happy and contribute to her life in some way, and we all know, let's just cut to the chase here. We're all responsible for our own happiness, right?
Right, of course.
But we can, in that, in our own personal responsibility of being happy, we can allow people to contribute to making us happy. And if she's unwilling to receive in that way and to let him know ways that he can win and contribute to her, there's no point.
That's a very good point. Because, you know, feeling nagged or criticized, something men may complain about. And women complain about not being fully understood and, you know, cherished, let's say. So there's a disconnect. So how do we fix that? So we have, let's say a couple of them married, they have kids, you know, maybe they don't believe in divorce, you know, they have some kind of religious or cultural aspects to that. So what is your advice to them, you know, to try to save the marriage?
Well, there's something that I'm assuming we see over and over and over again. And that's in a long-term marriage, the dynamic of he can't make her happy. And she doesn't feel appreciated.
Yes.
And it is like one big game of chicken. Someone has to go first. Right? She's going to be angry and bitter and criticized because she's not appreciated. He doesn't love her enough, care about her, or respect her enough to act right and do the things and rah, 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 right? And he's walking around going, I can't win. I can't make her happy. I don't know what to do. She's grouchy all the time. She's criticizing and changing me. So, and that doesn't work because criticism works really, really well with other women. Criticism doesn't really work on men. There's four layers that it's got to get through to you guys if we're going to criticize you. And it usually doesn't make it through the first layer. For a woman, you criticize me, it goes straight to my heart. I'll change. I'm not going to like it. I could walk out my front door right now and I could have I'm in downtown San Francisco, so there's lots of homeless people around. Yes. I could have a homeless person say, you look stupid in purple. and I would never wear that again. Right? It's straight to the heart. I don't consider the source.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's also a logical point of view. The logical person can say, yeah, that makes you look a little fat. And you're not trying to hurt the person, but you're just trying to cut through the chase. A feeling person would take it very personal. They will be hurt.
Yeah.
But then with men, well, we know that males don't like to argue or conflict because they have a higher physiological arousal. Their heart rate goes faster. Their blood pressure increases. So males often suffer more emotionally and physically when there's any kind of disharmony, and people don't realize that. You know, they may have a tough exterior, but inside they feel it more.
Yeah.
Now there's something I really like. In your material, you talk about I don't know if this is for married couples, but you call it a full moon ritual where you ask certain questions. And this is a great question you ask. Is there anything you need from me that you're finding hard to get? Tell us more about that question.
Yeah. So Dave and I did this from the very beginning of our relationship, and there's 17 questions in this full moon ritual. And we ask it every month. It doesn't always end up being the full moon, but 17 questions back and forth every single month. One of the questions being, is there anything that you need that you're finding hard to get? And we ask each other these questions because we're already really great at giving each other what we need and making each other happy and having a great life. But, you know, life happens and there are misunderstandings and there's unconsciousness sometimes when we're tired or whatever. And if something bad happens, what is predictable would be for someone like me or for him to just swallow it, just eat it. And maybe I'll talk about it later. That hurt my feelings, but I'll talk about it later. But you know, there's never a good time to talk about something really unpleasant.
Yes.
You're not like, hey, I know we're in the middle of this really great Saturday afternoon. Let's talk about something unpleasant.
We're watching a great movie, but let's talk about,
let's pause it for a minute.
You screwed up this week. So let's talk
about it. Yeah. And so with the full moon ritual, we have this opportunity and we actually make it really juicy and yummy. And we do a little 5-minute meditation and get in the zone and the whole bit. Right.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And we just say this space is really safe. Mm. Everybody means well. Right. We don't mean to hurt each other. Let's talk about what's been going on in the last month. And then we ask the questions back and forth, and those questions kind of lift up the carpets and do the light housekeeping in the relationship, check the corners for dust bunnies to make sure everything is clean.
I like that. And I think you can even apply this. I think you mentioned in sexual areas, sexual satisfaction, because a lot of people are really unfulfilled sexually and they're maybe embarrassed to talk about it. So is this a way to people to talk about what they want in the sexual way?
Absolutely. And one of the questions is there something that you love that you're slowly letting go of? Yes. Or is there something that you want more of? These are all in the 17. Yeah.
Interesting. So once a month, we got to bare our souls, right? But you said do it in a fun way. It might be candlelight or, you know, meditation or something.
Yeah. Well, we come together in a very meditative state in the beginning, just so we can just kind of, we're so California, right? California wooey. Just so we can kind of drop into the same energy and really be in a space of love.
Right. But you know, we're talking in our podcast, it's all over the world. We have a lot of listeners in Latin America, in Europe. So I think, you know, a lot of the stuff is really spreading worldwide. You know, the idea of consciousness, affirmative relationships and things like that.
Yeah.
Now, is this something, Wendy, that you do in a group setting? Is it like one-on-one, these kind of full moon things?
Well, the full moon thing is something that you would do with a person.
Okay. So you would do it with your partner at your house, you're saying?
Yeah. Okay. Yes, exactly. If anybody wants that, they can grab it on my website. It's free.
Oh, okay, great. So do you actually have any groups or any kind of encounters or anything like that with people that you do? Any seminars?
I do. I lead a video workshop. And if you can't make it live, it's recorded. It's not like recorded and out there forever and ever, but you can catch up basically. And I do 8-week workshops via video. One is called Happy in Love, and it's pretty much a lot of what we talked about today. I go into great detail about how to be happy, really be happy in love and not change your partner so they can be happy too.
That's great. You know, I would even want to talk to you about maybe you and I doing a seminar or something, because I do something called the dating masquerade where everyone puts on a mask and then we have their personality types, kind of like a sticker. So they interact with each other. And at the end of the night, the mask comes off and then you figure out if you're compatible in many ways. So it's
a fun event.
So instead of Cinderella, we call it Typerella and Prince Type. So based on your personality type, it's a fun thing. So would you be open to any kind of collaboration or working in some ways?
Sure.
great. Well, you know, if you get down here, I can come up there. We can do something. Do you know a guy named Rich Goss, by the way, who does the singles? He does the stuff, single seminars in the Bay Area. He's pretty well known. But, yeah, definitely that will be great. Now we're running out of time. So I just want to ask you one more thing here. Now this has been a really, really content filled, presentation. I really like all the stuff you're talking about. What's your background? Did you go to a certain educational background or how did you, develop your knowledge?
Well, I actually, like I said, I was a student about 16 years ago trying to understand men better.
Right.
And paid a lot of attention to what was out there in terms of books and whatnot. And then I ran into Alison Armstrong and started studying with Alison. And and now I'm a licensed person with her information.
Oh, still great.
From time to time. So some of the core distinctions I have are absolutely Allison's with her blessing. And then in 16 years of researching, I've taken on tweaks and changes and yeah, buts and all kinds of other, you know, I kind of forked off. and so, yeah, my research has been social research. But I've interviewed thousands of men over the decade plus. And no, I went to college, but not for what I'm doing.
You went to Relationship Life College, just like we do here.
Yeah.
So we call this Love University. So Love University is about educating people, and, you know, kind of almost in a college way, but, in a personal way to help you find love within and without. Mm-hmm. Now, Wendy, is there anything you're excited about? Any new ventures? Cause I know you wrote a book and it looks like it's option for a movie. Is there anything coming up that you're really excited about?
Yes, it's coming.
Are you coming to Hollywood to the Academy Awards?
I'm coming to Hollywood. It's going to be so exciting. Okay. So there was so much interest on both sides, on both the series side and the movie side, and we had to pick. And so we're going with the series, and we're looking. HBO is really interested, and they're in talks, and we're working on it out right now.
Awesome.
So we're looking at an HBO series. Netflix is also interested, but I'm pushing for HBO. And HBO series.
Is it the 121 First Dates? Is that the one?
Yes. My book, 121 First Dates.
So you took 121 dates to find your soulmate? Is that the idea?
It did. It took forever. Partly because I'm just a really hard match and I have a very long list and I was not willing
either
to
one date a week for it's either one date a week for a year or for 2 years. I'm not sure.
I was single for a decade.
Ah, okay. Well, but that's not that many dates. 121 dates in 10 years.
Bulk of them happened in 3 years.
Oh, 3 years. Okay. Yeah, so you jam-packed it pretty much.
Yeah, I jam-packed 3 years. Yeah, the last three just knocked it out of the park.
Wow.
So, yeah, 121 First Dates is being made into a series, and we're really excited about incredible. It. And we're at the character Bible and figuring out who's going to play me and all that. Good job.
Oh, my goodness. That's craziness. That's awesome. Well, listen, I'd love to have you back again sometime, if you like, on a podcast. Cool. You know, we really enjoyed it.
Oh, good.
And
thank you.
There's a lot to offer here.
Yeah, I'm happy to come back.
And tell us where people can find you, about your websites or any other things you have.
Yeah, great. Thanks. You can find me at wendyspeaks.com. That's Wendy Speaks. And I've got tons of stuff, everything from the 8-week series classes that you can jump into if you're dating or if you need help with your sex life or if you want that happy and love relationship. These are all for women. And I have a ton of free stuff. I've got a 20-minute audio on jealousy. I got all kinds of stuff. So come find out.
Fantastic. So WendySpeaks.com, is that the one?
Yep.
Excellent. So, well, I really enjoyed having you. And again, Love University, if you want to reach us for any questions or comments or to be a guest on the show, you can reach us at loveuniversity.love. Email lovetype4u@aol.com. That's LOVETYPE, the number 4U@AOL.com, and 310-226-8090. Again, Wendy, it's been a great pleasure. And we look forward to your continued success and hope to see you again. And love is the key, right? We're all working on that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Avila. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Love University. Put your pens and papers away. Time for a recess, and see you next time.